Welcome to the Untribal Podcast, the show that gives you news content by regular people for regular people. Today we are talking about the hustings. The SNP hustings, of course, that have been over your social medias in recent weeks. We have two of our colleagues here, Sally and Josh, here with us, who have been both been present at hustings, is it? Am I right in saying
yes.
that?
No, I haven't. Well, I've seen them.
Not in your home. Yeah. Right, that's good. That's a good start. But, and which one were you at, Sally?
I was at the Inverness one.
Okay. Tell us about the hustle. What was the platform like? What was the layout like? What have these debates kind of been like?
Well, the first thing I kind of noticed is how popular they were. They sold out so quickly. Mm-hmm. I know loads of my friends in Edinburgh like couldn't get tickets because it was so popular, which I think is a good sign that the membership is really engaged in this debate. Mm-hmm. At the Inverness one, so the people who are supporting Hamza's campaign, myself included in that, we had a little photo call outside beforehand to support him, which was really nice, actually. He's just so, like, personable and, like, genuine, and he actually remembers you, which I know sounds like it shouldn't be that wild, but for a politician of his platform and stuff, it's really nice for him to come up and actually remember your name and know the kind of work you're doing. So we had the photo call, and then... it was in Eden Court, so anyone who knows that venue, it was in the kind of smaller theatre. It was a really nice space, though. And then we had Mike Russell chairing it. I think he's done quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. And then they all came out. They did their, like, six-minute intro speech, which was pretty consistent across all of them. And then it was into a Q&A session for them, basically, the whole rest of the time, which I thought was good, but... like, these are politicians and they will talk. So I think there could have been like a time limit on their answers because we hardly got through any questions in Inverness. And that's just because their answers were so long, which is a shame because so many people had their hands up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, especially with issues that are perhaps a little bit more touchy as well. Mm-hmm. They want to cover all bases as well. it's not straightforward answers, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned this sort of popular support for Hamza in Inverness, because I was hearing in Edinburgh everyone wanted their photos with Kate. So just wondering, is this going to be a regional kind of distinction here? You know, is the wealth and stuff that's in Edinburgh going to dictate potentially how they vote?
Oh, that's interesting.
Is there going to be an economic sort of front here as opposed to perhaps in the Highlands? I don't know. Interesting stuff. And Josh, you've scammed us.
Yeah,
you told us you were going to go to hustings, but
just
you
anything
haven't.
To get on.
Did you watch the hustings, Josh?
Yes.
Right, good. Yeah. Well, tell us about it.
I think they were all very similar. I think that's kind of what happens when you have three individuals doing a tour of the country in like 2 weeks or something. Mm. So there's a lot of repetition, but I think they all came off well, some better than others. But I think the ability to just even get out there and have a chance to answer questions isn't something we see very often. Obviously, we've not had a leadership contest within the party for years. So the actual chance to kind of question the three people that have the potential to become the next First Minister is something that a lot of members that don't regularly get invited to or attend the various other events around the country, it's something that they don't get a chance to do very often.
Okay. Well, you guys are, you know, young people, but you've been long-standing members in the party despite that. Did all your questions get answered in these hustings, or did you think there was anything missing?
I think maybe not specifically the ins and outs of the questions, but I know enough about each candidate's views that I can almost like draw conclusions on what they would say because they've been questioned so thoroughly. And I do think, like, picking up on Josh's point there as well, I think a lot of the like conversation around this is focusing on the specifics of their answer. There's not much about this is actually like a really difficult thing for these people to do, whether you agree with their politics or not. Mm-hmm. Having to like tour the country and be grilled like relentlessly is so tough. And like, yeah, we should expect that of our First Minister. They have to be able to answer the questions of their membership and of the country. But it is challenging to be like constantly on show and every word you say being picked apart. So I think we do need to give them a bit of like compassion in that area.
Yeah, and the shoes they're having to fill as well.
Yeah,
is monumental. I think we're perhaps inevitably in for a little bit of a shock when it comes to the next leader, because it's going to be someone that has not got anywhere near as much experience as Nicola Sturgeon or an Alex Salmond. So I think it'll take a little bit of getting used to. And I think it was right that we gave these candidates a bit of time to flesh out what they would be about, what their kind of vision would be, because I mean it was pretty sudden anyway. I think we touched on that last time, Josh. Who's opening statements were you most impressed with, Josh?
Well, I think probably...
Taking bias aside.
Yeah, well, I think probably in the most biased way possible. I think Hamza Yusuf is... He's the most well-rounded character, I think, of the three. I think his ability to, like Sally said, and I've spoken to Hamza kind of on a more personal level, his ability to kind of remember faces and be more personable is something that I feel is pretty unmatched within the party at, like, at all levels. I think it's... and that's nothing on MDLs because it's a really hard thing to do, but he's just so personable, and I feel his opening statement every time kind of wrote home how well-rounded he is and how the... Because I think there's a lot of focus naturally, especially because it's the SNP, on independence, and I think that's right, but I think Hamza's kind of point that independence is a means to an end and not an end in itself, and that he doesn't really see a space for an independent Scotland that's not, you know, more progressive and more inclusive of everybody's rights. I think that came across. I think he really managed to sell that very well across all of his opening statements.
I think he's the only one that's grown in
the campaign.
Yeah, yeah, you can see his like development and like how brilliant a leader he'd be.
I watched him on the Sunday show with Martin Geisler, and he was really firm. There was no hesitations. No. He was confident in what he was saying. And I think he's got more and more confident as it's went on. I can't say the same for the other two. I think the stuff on gender and religion is grounded a little bit on Kate.
Yeah.
I think in the last debate, you seen her get quite emotional when she was asked about that. You know, she was almost crying, actually, because it's obviously affecting her, how her colleagues are now perceiving of her. You know, it's all came out to the fore, and it's definitely affected her in that way. Ash Regan, I can't really work this one out, to be honest with you. I don't really know what she's about. I can't tell if she's grown in confidence. She's very, you know, she comes across very angry at times.
Yeah.
What do you make of her, Sally?
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't put my finger on it. And, like, I want, like, we have two women in this race. I want to be supporting a woman just as, like,
yeah, you and Kelly were very clear about that.
Yeah, I know. I think it's pretty clear that I am definitely a supporter of women for the most part. But I just think, yeah, with Ash, I just don't know what to make of her and her, like, views I can't get on board with. And then the way she talks to her colleagues, I don't find it hugely respectful. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, like, be kind. And, like, I went into this, like, debate almost thinking, right, I'm gonna just hear them all out ahead of the hustings. I'm not gonna like pick somebody before they've had a chance to sort of have their say. But with her, yeah, I'm just like, I just cannot see you successfully leading our country, I think. And I don't see her winning at all. I don't think she is representative of the views in our party. But yeah,
she doesn't feel like an SNP member.
No,
like she talks about the good old days of before 2014, when there was a real sense of optimism and energy around the Yes movement, which I can understand, to be fair, because we've not really felt that same sense yet, albeit we've not had a referendum, to be fair.
But most of us weren't in the part. I joined after 2014. So you're alienating a huge amount of the progressive young people in our party who got on board because they were so disappointed or they got so excited during that referendum. So to say, oh, we want it like that, most of us are like, we don't know what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's such a good point. I think this leadership election, if nothing else, will show just how influential the young people in the party are.
I think, and if you alienate them, it's like, well, good luck. You're absolutely not going to get anywhere.
Because I think very quickly a lot of the youth of the party felt alienated by the comments that Kate Forbes was making.
Yeah.
And I think that even though she's tried so hard to kind of heal that rift, and she seems to have done so like somewhat successfully with the older members of the party, I think the young people in the party still have a, like, it still sticks in their throat quite a lot. And I think, I think if nothing else, this election will show just how influential the YSI, but also just the young people in general in the party are.
And have you spoke to people in like the YSI?
Yeah, I've spoken to a few of them, and I think a lot of them, obviously, what Kate said, like, and the comments that she made don't infringe on any rights that I have just now, but they do infringe on the rights of a lot of people that I know very well, and a lot of people who are highly influential in the party. And I think, speaking to young people, I think, if nothing else, they just feel a little bit betrayed and hurt by a party that we've built on progressive agendas, and we've tried to make ourselves so progressive and open and inclusive, and I think we've done so well, to just kind of have that almost just thrown back in our face by, you know, the most likely, if not the second most likely in the polls to win this election, is I think it hurt a lot of people, and I think it will be really telling when the results come out how badly it affected them.
Yeah, she used a lot of analogies. I was watching the Aberdeen one, and she used a lot of analogies like, we're treading water. You know, there's a risk we might get swept away. We need to relight the fire, heal the rifts.
Honestly, these words make no sense to me. I don't know what that means. When you're saying that, I'm like, what is that?
I wonder where she gets this from. Like, I know there's clear division in the party. There is. Like, you can't. There's no denying that. There's definitely different opinions on certain policies that have become more polarized, and tensions have become higher on certain issues, and you know that's undeniable. But you could probably say that for quite a few parties in the UK.
Yeah.
But the down talking of the SNP, I've noticed, is unbelievable. And one thing I will be asking her on Wednesday is, you said quite specifically that can't.
She's coming on, isn't she?
Yeah, she's coming on Wednesday,
and
she said quite specifically, I can't ask people to keep voting SNP under this current agenda. I've repeated that a few times, but does that mean she rescinds her membership?
So then why are you standing as a candidate in our party asking people to vote for you and then saying you can't ask them to vote for you? Which one is it?
Yeah, but it very much felt like a pitch to the other independence parties rather than the SNP supporters.
I noticed her wording on talking about making sure any supporters of independence, like, we are having conversations with them.
Apart from the Greens.
Yeah.
Well, the voicemail.
Yeah. I know.
That's another one. I want to know who she phoned.
Like, I know.
Was the voicemail left
it
to
and, like, pick up
Patrick Harvey?
Yeah.
That was bizarre. I mean, she's set herself apart in this sort of continuation. I mean, Kate Forbes, to be fair, has talked a lot about economics and how we need to robust our plan on that framework, but she's not dithered too far away in terms of being progressive. Well, I mean, debatably so. She's trying to reel that back in recent weeks. But she's been very on the outset to say, you know, we've lost our way in terms of oil and gas, road dueling. These are things that we don't agree on with the Greens. Is that correct? Do people in the SNP feel like we need to continue oil and gas investment and invest in roads instead of the green environment?
I don't think so. 95% of the SNP membership voted for the Green Deal. Yep. I think we're pretty on board with having the Greens on our side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I can't see Regan winning earlier. I can't see Regan winning either, but we'll see what happens. She talked a lot about accountability and being transparent as well. She actually quoted an article from the Daily Record saying, where is this missing 600K?
Yep.
This could rip the party apart, could it not?
I don't think so. I don't think she's got enough influence in our party to do that. I think our party is a progressive, left-leaning party, and most of us share those values. I think there's a very loud majority right now, which make it seem like that's not the case. But to be honest, I think a lot of those left when another party was set up in Scotland, which supports independence, but not those who shall not be named. So I think a lot of them have gone there, and I mean, if you look at who is advising Ash, it's people from that party. So it's like, if your views are more aligned with that party, then maybe they're best suited to you.
Yeah, it's the same same advisor as Alex Salmond had when he was.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's the same.
Now,
interesting. Well, one thing I noted from Aberdeen was an audience member said, how are we going to protect sex-based rights for women? And she insisted she didn't want to be gaslighted for the conversation to deviate towards gender. Some people were booing her. It was quite an uncomfortable moment last night. Sally, you're a woman. You're such a strong feminist. And you see that from your campaign last week. You care so much about your fellow women. Do you know what I mean? How does this make you feel, really inside? You know, I know you're progressive, and I know you're.
Yeah, my politics are not like a secret. I think anyone who
absolutely. But like, how does it really make you feel inside? Do you feel a sense of discomfort?
You know what it makes me feel? It makes me feel really like I start off with almost a place of like sadness, but like really deep compassion for these women, because I think, like, as a woman and who's been through quite a lot of trauma, I think has something happened to you to make you fear so much anything happened to you? Have you had a really bad experience of sexual assault or something along those lines? So from that point, I can give it compassion and understanding when I'm like really trying. But I also think at the same time, it's like you're getting it wrong. This isn't like, this isn't progressing women's rights, and it's actually, you're holding us back now. So as much as I can get it, and I get that women have had like a hard time of it throughout the course of the world, it's like, yeah, you're picking the wrong battles. And like, then I get frustrated as well, because obviously my campaign is really to do with protecting women and like sort of stopping that chain of like it going from public harassment and then working its way up all the way down to rape. And then when I don't see these same women supporting my campaign, which really does look at the safety of women, it's so frustrating, because I'm like, I think you're just, I don't know, being angry about an issue that really is, isn't as controversial as you're trying to make it out like it is.
That's interesting. And yeah, and I think we'll note that I think Joanna Terry and Ash Regan are quite open about, I think they have had traumatic experiences in their past, which are probably fueling this burning desire to protect women in any way, shape,
yeah, and
or
it
form.
Can cloud your judgment, sadly, sometimes, not for the better.
So one thing that Joanna Terry did say was that she's sick of straight white males getting in the way of this debate. Josh, you're a member of the SNP.
You're a straight white man.
You know, and speaking for myself, I start to feel uncomfortable talking about this now, because I don't know what it will ever feel like. You know, I can't fully understand, although I try, and I really do my best to try. I won't fully understand. So should we not be having this debate, Josh?
I think our voices are rightfully so less listened to than those with real life experience. But I think it depends. It's going to sound really stupid, right? But it depends what kind of a straight white man you are. If you're a straight white man who surrounds yourself with other straight white men, and that's your conversations, then really what you've got to say on the matter means nothing. But speaking for myself, I've got a lot of friends, very close friends, my sister, they're all members of the LGBTQ society. And when we have these conversations, I'm not picking up from them what seems to be I'm being told as their views. Or like talking to women, like I'm really not picking up from the majority of the women that I speak to the issues that others seem to be saying are the issues that women are facing. And I think it goes two ways, because I think there is a lot of, as Joanna Cherry said, you know, she's sick and tired of straight white men telling her how they should be feeling. But at the same time, Joanna Cherry, absolutely, she's a lesbian and she can speak for the lesbian community, but at the same time, she can't speak for all lesbians, and she seems to think that she can. And she says, you know, this is the experience as of lesbian women, and it doesn't seem to really line up with the experience from the lesbian women that I've spoken to that they are having. So I think it's a lot of, I think it's tricky, because I think these kind of conversations need to be had on a big level with the people that they're directly affected. But I think no matter kind of your sexual orientation, your race, your gender, when you try and speak for a whole community, you're going to get it wrong. Even if you're speaking for the majority of the community, there's still members of these communities that don't agree with what you're saying. And I think the conversation needs to be taken away from people like Joanna Cherry, who seems to just be talking for everybody, and actually brought to like bigger communities. And we need to have wider conversations than just believing what this one person is saying is the experience.
I think we need clarity.
Yeah.
From all of them, actually. I think we are beating around the bush in terms of this issue. We don't know what people's positions are. I mean, I know Hamza is very, you know, he says he's very, you know, supportive of the GRR reform bill, for example. But is he for the current legal standing in terms of the Equality Act? We don't know that. You know, because the Equality Act just now says if you attain a gender recognition certificate, then that changes your sex identity, not just your gender. Like, people talk about it as two different things. But in fact, they're, like, in a legal perspective, they're the same thing, once that is changed. So what are we now debating? Are we debating that you can't change your sex? Because if that's the case, then transgender people don't exist, or transsexual people don't exist. So we need to really have that conversation. What is Ash Regan saying when she doesn't believe in self-ID? Because without self-identification of things in your body, there isn't anything.
Like, yeah, I mean, we all self-identify.
That's the root of of everything we discover about our body, you know? Without sort of self-reflection, how you're feeling and what your sensory experience is, we don't have we don't have that notion. Do you
don't really have anything.
We don't have anything, yeah, exactly. So I'd like some clarity from all of them, to be fair. What else was there? The Greens pact, they seem to be split on this. Regan is pretty inadvertently saying, I'm not interested. What do you think of that?
She's giving, like, almost, like, I'm trying to engage with the Greens, but they won't engage with me. But then I saw on Twitter, I mean, this is not a good place to gather your information. But I'm sure I saw them reply to her saying that they'd, like, they hadn't received anything. Yeah. So you're like, well, which one is it?
Yeah.
Like, and also, I do think, like, going back to the point, 95% of us voted for this Greens deal. Like, you can't. You as one person cannot go against the vast majority of your membership say that you don't want to like go for that. Like, Greens are a progressive left-leaning party as well, so is the SNP for the most part. It does make sense if we want independence to match up with them, because we do align on a lot of things, and if that's going to get us independence, like, why would you alienate that part?
Well, I wonder if this gender thing has got something to do with it, because the Greens are very open about how progressive they really are on this. You know, they want to potentially lower it from even 16.
Yeah.
I mean, which is, you know, which sounds very radical, but I know Spain, for example, have lowered it to 14 in recent weeks. Perhaps this is playing on their minds. What do you think, Josh?
I think it's possible. I think, like Sally said, 95% of the membership voted for the Bute House Agreement. And so really, regardless on individual policies that Ash Regan may kind of differ from the Green Party, she can't turn her back on what is essentially the whole party. It seems Ash's campaign has seemed very kind of my way or the highway, and it's strange because she doesn't seem to have the amounts of public support to kind of govern in that way. It seems like Ash Regan knows what she wants and she knows how she's going to get it. And even if it doesn't work that way, she's still just gonna go forward with it.
Can we just like touch on her like way of getting to Indy, which is like, what is it? We basically just keep voting at elections, and eventually Westminster will just have to listen to us. Oh yeah, because Westminster have like so famously been supportive of Scotland.
I think she makes a point that every country that's ever left the British Empire never had to ask Westminster and then eventually just got it. But there's hundreds of years of history in between them deciding they want to leave the Empire and then actually leaving the Empire.
I think she could have put it better. For sure. Because what she's saying is that if we express consistent democratic wishes to become independent and the UK is denying it, then the pressure from the international community on the UK government will eventually lead to them caving in. That's what she's saying. But
it's just not concrete enough, is it? You can't just... People want more than that.
Just to touch on that, this is almost the issue that I had with the de facto referendum idea as well, is that we have consistently expressed that the majority of the public are at least in favour of a second independence referendum. And the SNP have won, and now I guarantee it's different because we technically haven't won with 50%+ of the vote, but the last 8 elections that the SNP have ran, they've won. And so if that's not using the ballot box to express your democratic wishes, then what's going to change between now and next year's general election, for example?
I know, and like in the Westminster Headed Debate, I was actually in the House of Commons listening to this debate on independence. Was it the end of last year? And when you hear the Tory ministers talking about it, they could not care less. Like, like, refer to my previous answer. Well, in your previous answer, you also did not say anything. Yeah. They don't care at all. And for us to be like blindly led along this path where apparently one day they're suddenly going to listen to us because we've voted for it enough times, it's not going to happen.
And I think it plays right into the Tories' hands, really, if we just keep saying, well, we'll just, like, the only plans we have for independence is to run a manifesto on independence and win the election, because ultimately, was it 2019, we won 53 of 59 seats or something like that, and that wasn't enough to push us over the line. And so if that's not enough for the Tories to listen, then really what is? Because I doubt it's an extra 6 MPs or whatever it is.
I mean, you could argue the vote share needs to be bigger.
Yeah.
Because the vote share at the moment doesn't have the SNP and Greens quite above that 50%. Even if it was to eclipse it slightly, I feel like if we're trying to pick a moment where we just get over 50%, that doesn't really feel like democracy either.
No.
Because we look at Brexit and what's happened here.
Exactly.
And people were misinformed and people are regretting those choices.
Absolutely.
That's the last thing we want.
Yeah.
That would be a nightmare.
And I think when... I can't remember if it was the Channel 4 debate or not, when it got thrown back at Ash that, okay, well, say you get 52%, you declare independence, and then the Tories run a campaign on, if we get more than 50%, we're going back in the union, what happens then? And her answer just kind of was, that's up to the Tories. And it then does become this issue of kind of back and forth, where if we can't consistently get over 50% for a prolonged period of time, we do run the risk of winning the election, making moves towards independence, the Tories throwing their own campaign back at us.
I'd imagine we finally get it and then it gets taken away. That'd be brutal.
That would be the worst.
Actually, yeah.
All these scenarios are really messy.
Yeah,
like we can all agree on that. So we do need a clear
vision.
You
know what though? I actually think, I don't know if either of you read Ben McPherson's article he wrote last night, and he made a really good point, which I saw one comment said like, I'm not going to be alive to see independence at this rate. And there is a group of people of that thinking who for their whole lives have wanted independence and they don't want to slow it down. But I actually think the danger is if we don't slow it down and are not careful with our plan and what we do, well, we're going to lose. It's better to do it slowly and do it right than to rush into it and get it completely wrong. And I think, there is that sort of polarization of the young people. Mm-hmm. Like me and Josh are kind of like, I'm like, well, I'll wait as long as it takes to do it and do it right than the people who just want it done because they don't want to not see it happen in their lifetime, which I get, and it is really sad, but it's like you have to think of the people who are going to be living with the decisions that we make. So.
I think that's interesting because I think that went out of Nicola's favour, because if we had said no and then we were in this position where we're in the UK and we're also in the European Union and we start building those building blocks again of a sort of long-term plan to get independence. Let's campaign for more devolution, for example.
Yep.
But because of this Brexit thing, it put an immediate knee-jerk clause in everyone's minds to say, right, that's an absolute joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we didn't vote for this.
Yeah.
And we were promised European membership. So it was almost like Nicola was almost snookered into trying to force in a referendum, which I think any rational person could see some logic in that longer term vision of independence. And, you know, let's campaign for more fiscal powers first and foremost, and then we'll see what happens. What did you think of that plan, Josh?
I think it was right for the time. But I think that, obviously as someone that wanted to be in the European Union, if that hadn't happened and we had a longer push for independence and we kind of gained more fiscal powers, like you say, like that would have been ideal. But, you know, I think it was also good timing in the sense that we kind of just had the independence referendum. We lost it narrowly. And then something as catastrophic and as taken completely out of Scotland's control as leaving the EU was kind of an immediate we told you. this is what happens. Our voice is not listened to. But actually, though, I think more so than actually just leaving the European Union, the new Northern Ireland agreement, actually, I think, is more of a push for independence as well, because now not only were we completely ignored when we got forced out of the EU, we're now completely ignored because we're the only country that didn't vote for it that now have no form of deal with the EU whatsoever. Whereas Northern Ireland also didn't vote for Brexit, but now have this kind of in-betweeny stage that even Rishi Sunak himself has come out and said, wow, look what a lucky position you're in.
and they voted for a smaller margin than we did as well, by the way. And it paints a picture of a scenario where we don't need a physical border, which is massive. I think that would have stuck in people's minds a lot when independence. I think back to my family's business, who do removals in England and all that. If they were to need goods checks and
of course
passport checks and all that would have been quite disastrous economically. So having that scenario where and the lack of a physical border as possible, I think that's huge. We've still got a couple of TV debates to go. What do you guys want to see from these TV debates?
I'm not gonna lie, I don't want to see them at all. I think I've had enough. I think I've heard enough, and it's actually getting to the point where I think the more you watch it, the more it's like, actually, just feels, it doesn't feel good for me to be watching three people in our party who are quite high up. To be speaking to each other in the way they are, and just, I don't know, it's like difficult viewing. I don't find it enjoyable. So the ballot's open today. I'm going to cast my vote and kind of try and stay out of it.
Remove yourself.
Yeah, which makes for not a good podcast because I'm not giving any insight, but I think,
Great. Our newest recruit is holding back. I'm not bothered. What about yourself, Josh?
Well, I think we touched on it last time that this kind of tearing apart of each other, especially in Kate and Hamza's position where they are both, I think the most important thing to remember is that regardless of the leadership election, Hamza Yousaf and Kate Forbes less so because she's on maternity leave, are still serving government ministers for us. So to stand up there and kind of, when Kate went in on Hamza and said, you know, your transport secretary, the trains never ran on time, your health secretary, we've got massive waiting lists, that's not a good look regardless, because I think...
And like, did Douglas Ross not bring that up?
Like, Douglas Ross said, yeah.
Like, come on.
And he's, I'm sure Douglas Ross said when Kate Forbes had just written the next load of Tory leaflets for us.
Yeah.
So exactly. I think when we're fueling opposition's fire like this, I think we lose sight of the fact that, you know, what is it, 2 weeks today, the leadership election is over and there will be a new leader of the party, and then everybody else then needs to fall back into line. And Kate Forbes, as far as I'm concerned, still wants to serve in government. She'll have to continue to serve in a government under somebody that she thinks is, or she's openly expressed that she thinks is a complete and utter failure at their job. Yeah. And I think that it's hard because it's definitely heated during a leadership election. And especially when, you know, you've got all these hustings and they're all very kind of like, oh, the SNP's a happy family and we don't tear into each other. And then you get, it's not necessarily down just to the candidates. I know that like the presenters of these debates want that, because that's what gets the views, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what we were saying in the last podcast. But I think we lose sight of the fact that like in 2 weeks this is over and everything you've said still stays out there. So I think from tonight's debate and then any more that follow, I definitely would like to see less tearing down of each other and tearing down of the party's record. Like you said about Ash Reagan, as an activist, to hear someone that we have helped, even just indirectly, get elected on a manifesto that we've all supported, stand up on national television and say, well, I can't really be asking people to vote for this anymore. It's really disheartening, because that's kind of what we, that's like what Sally and I do, continually ask people to vote for it. So when she has stood up and kind of gone, yeah, I can't ask you to vote for this anymore, it's that really sticks in your
throat. And on that, I think they sort of don't maybe take into account that people like us who are going to be out on the doors, they're going to be using things that they've heard in these debates, and we're going to have to answer for them. And it's, it feels kind of unfair. You're like, okay, so how am I sticking up for the SNP when you're saying these things? Yeah. It makes it like really difficult to do, which, yeah.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Sally and Josh, for joining us today to give us some insights of the hustings events of the last week. We're now going to hear from one of our newer editors, Caitlin Fairley. You might recognise her from the article that was released yesterday, rounding off International Women's Day week. She gave some interesting insights, some sceptical insights as to International Women's Day, that the capitalist agenda that might be taking advantage of such an important day to women. So I'd very much urge you guys to read that article, well worth your time. But for now, let's hear from our Caitlin Fairley, who was at the Glasgow SNP hustings.
So the Glasgow hustings was, in terms of content, similar to a lot of the other hustings, because obviously they've really honed their pitches down. And a lot of the responses to questions were things that we'd heard before, in terms of how they're going to go for independence, you know, all of the sound bites that we've heard a lot of throughout the hustings was definitely there in Glasgow as well. I think one of the differences about being there in person was the sort of before and after chat with members.
Right, okay.
And also, I think, watching audience response to the candidates as well. One of the big takeaways, so I think also it's Glasgow, which means geographically, there's like a political context to that place. It's like fairly left wing. So therefore, in terms of social issues, I was sort of expecting Hamza to be the favourite. And I think that was really evident in how the audience or the members were responding. There was a slight tone and energy, which actually felt quite concerning to me in terms of like how we host debate, because there was two real clear examples of this. The first was Ash Reagan talking about her independence summit. Now, you know, Personally, my feelings on that are that it won't work, and that it, you know, I don't actually agree with a lot of her views on how we reach independence. I think that's, they're fairly, there's a fairly small amount of people in the SNP that do agree that that's how we should reach independence. I think that's fair to say. However, when she was speaking, both Humza and the members were sort of not letting her finish, sort of laughing at her in a way that made me feel a bit uncomfortable, or a bit like, I'm just not sure that this is how we should host debate, especially within people that are in a party together. Now, we've seen a little bit of this already, haven't we, through the TV debates, where, you know, it got pretty cutthroat, and we've already seen debate being sort of shut down, or maybe not presented in the best way. But it felt different, I think, being in person.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Because a lot of what, you know, we've already touched on is the fact that Reagan's very much come across as someone that almost doesn't belong in the party with a lot of the things she's saying. And that's nothing against her. She's more than, you know, I quite like how she's bringing something else to the table. It's freshening up to the debate. And I think the independence cause kind of needed that. They did need a bit of a freshen up. And I think, you know, even the, you know, Kate Forbes's pitch of saying, look, we're not doing enough on the economic side of things. We need a bit more of a robust plan there.
Yeah.
You know, that's freshening up in itself. But it's interesting that you say that, because I've gauged that as well. There's very much, you know, there's no coincidence that people are saying the establishment seems to be behind Humza Yousaf because it's the continuity candidate, and the progressive policies the SNP have built themselves on, it seems to be slightly at risk with the other two candidates. And that's a shame for Ash that she's had to be received in that way. Just because of her ideas are different, it doesn't necessarily mean she should be shunned in that fashion. I think one problem a lot of people have is that, well, you know, if your views are that radically different from the SNP's, why are you here?
Yeah.
But that's what you're talking about in terms of the debate, in terms of laughing at her and shutting her down. That's awful. That's not right, is it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're right in the sense of, you know, if you're in a party and you're saying something and no one is agreeing with you, you're probably not in the right party. However, there is a small number of people that agree with her. She's not got any supporters in the party. You know, she's still polling within some level of support. So there's that point. There's also some candidates don't run expecting to win. Now, I have no idea whether this is Ash Reagan's intention or not. I don't know the woman. I really don't. But some candidates run because in the campaigning, they get to make their point that pushes the party more in line with what they want, right? And what she really wants is independence for Scotland. And what the SNP really wants is independence for Scotland. So the tension between someone who is going for the same thing as you and being treated in, this is my own personal opinion, but what came across as a bit arrogant, when you're a party that's founded on wanting independence and you've only convinced 50% of the country to vote for independence, that's a dangerous tone to be taking with someone who's offering something different to what you believe and what you think. And I think, you know, that's different, I think, to some of the social issues that people are rubbing up against. Because if, for example, with Kate Forbes saying that she herself wouldn't have an abortion, but she wouldn't legislate against it, for some people, that's a visceral lived experience. That's a, you become defensive about that because that's about bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
And so I can understand more easily why the debate becomes more divisive in situations like that. But when we're talking about somebody just trying to achieve the same thing as you, but doing it in a way that you completely disagree with, I don't understand that tone, and I don't understand that response or energy.
I think in terms of sort of moral, ethical questions, I think you kind of have to have a free vote in the parliament because, as you've said quite rightly, Caitlin, that all that what unites this party is the cause for independence. And I think what, you know, politicians like Joanna Cherry have been trying to highlight is that the SNP is a broader church than the Sturgeon era has made it out to be. Now, the progressive principles that the SNP have built themselves on have been very successful, and I think it would be bizarre to completely wipe that off the face of the earth, do you know what I mean, and go for something completely different. But what I think she was trying to say is, look, there is a voice here. There is a voice still to be heard, and this is what Ash Reagan is standing for. And maybe if she didn't think she would get in, making her voice heard and making the voice of those people heard was probably something that she felt quite strongly about. So it's interesting that you bring that up. And I think in terms of moral ethical decisions, I don't think there should be a whip on each political party. I think it should be a case of voting with conscience, because it's a completely different thing, you know, in terms of political manifestos. You can't put that so black and white in writing, because you're gonna have a broad church about that anyway. Especially the things on as touchy as euthanasia or abortion. You know, as progressive as any party may want to be, there's going to be members of the political party that will inevitably feel uncomfortable with those kind of things. Do you not agree?
Totally, absolutely. And Nicola Sturgeon didn't always stick to that principle. She didn't always stick to the principle of a conscious vote isn't whipped. And I think that where I absolutely agree is that the SNP has built their reputation on being a progressive left-wing party or centre-left party. And I think that that is right to build on that. But let's not forget that there was a mass exodus under Nicola Sturgeon, because for some people, it had gone too far to the left. Now, I don't think that it is necessarily means that we go all the way to the right, but nor do I think anyone is actually suggesting that. I don't think anyone is actually saying, let's go far right now, or let's abandon those principles entirely. Both Kate Forbes and Ash Reagan have talked about wanting to eradicate poverty, and that especially Kate Forbes, that's a driving force for her. That's not leave people to it and see how they get on. Like, that's someone who's really trying to make a society more equal and more fair. And whatever you think about the contradiction, actually, in some of the her personal views and her political motives, the idea that she or Ash are abandoning all of the founding principles of the SNP, I think, and I think from talking to other members on Saturday, is actually fairly short-sighted.
Right. Interesting. I mean, I was under the impression, I think a lot of what she's trying to do is pretty far removed from, I think, the majority of the party. I think that's just my personal opinion, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I don't know how big a voice this camp of the likes of Ash Reagan is representing. And I mean, I don't think she's just plucking this out of nowhere. She must have been speaking to other people in the party if there is some sort of voice there, unless it is like on a next level of like egotistical agenda, which I don't think it'll be. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's up for the debate. I don't know.
Sure, and we don't know. And I think what I did in that last part there was maybe conflate Kate and Ash into one, and that's not fair either, because they both might not be as progressive as we're used to, but they're different candidates with different levels of support, firstly, and also different sensibilities within the party. You know, Kate definitely has more support than Ash Reagan. We know that from all of the polls. And we also know that do we know this or is this my opinion? But what I think is that if she hadn't come out and said her personal beliefs in that first week, this would be a very different conversation that we'd be having right now. If she had just if what she's saying is she's not going to legislate based on her personal beliefs, just don't say what your personal beliefs are then. And then we would be having a completely different conversation. Yeah, because absolutely. One of the other things, and this was only from three specific members who I won't name, but they did say I could share this story. We're talking about, they also don't hold any sort of position with the SNP. They are members. We're talking about how the only reason they wouldn't vote for Kate is that she doesn't have the same social progressive views that they are used to in the party, but that they do not see Hamza leading them to independence, and so voting for Hamza, they recognise is a stopgap to when someone who comes along that can deliver that for the party. And again, this is a small number of people, so it's absolutely not scientific in terms of, you know, it's not a poll, but I thought it was a very interesting take on the situation, because I think it really boils down to the question of what is more important to the party, independence or those social progressions? And because what we're being faced with in this debate is a choice between them.
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, yeah. not to say that we wouldn't hold any sort of ethical standards under Kate or Ash, but it does seem like that's what it seems to be. This is how it's played out. And you've got big hitters like Mary Black who are saying, look, the party's going to be split if this choice goes one way, and that's a big statement. And I can understand the emotion that Mary is going through, if she, you know, as someone of an LGBT community member, you know, for that to be at risk, or a leader that doesn't see you in the same light as other people, or at least how she perceives that, you know, that's difficult for some people. That's very interesting. And to be honest with you, Caitlin, it's not the first person that I've spoke to either that's had that view either.
Yeah.
They think that, you know, they don't necessarily see Scotland becoming an independent country under Hamza, but in order just to protect that progressive style that the SNP has been going down under Nicola Sturgeon, they feel like they have to vote for him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that some people are being confronted with that choice, specifically Justin Kate, because in Kate, what we're seeing is someone who is saying that they want to tackle all of the things that the SNP have been talking about tackling, but hold personal views around women's rights, around LGBTQ rights, identities, actually. It's about their identities that she's come out and said that she disagrees with. But she has proved herself to be more competent in the ministerial positions that she has held. Mm. And again, this part of that same conversation was talking about how Kate should never have said on live television what she thought about Hamza's record as a minister.
No.
But that it wasn't all untrue, and that is also a conflict for people, because when you've been in three different ministerial positions and haven't actually got a track record of improving within those areas, then taking the top job on is a concern for members, and it's a concern, and it should be a concern. It should be a concern that somebody hasn't necessarily demonstrated in a huge amount of ways that they are competent in those roles to then oversee the whole party.
Interesting. Who are you fancying? Who do you think will get?
I'm not sure, you know. I think it will. I think, as I say, I think it's a real head-heart conflict that a lot of people are facing. Mm. I think that if people decide that they can ignore Kate's personal views and trust her not to legislate against it, I think she'll take it. I think if people are scared to take that risk, rightly so, you know, or you know, however they feel about that, if that feels like a step too far for them, I think Hamza will get it. But I don't necessarily think we'll see Hamza in that role for the 8 years we've seen Nicola Sturgeon, that's for sure.
That was myself on call with Caitlin Fairley. That's all we have time for this evening, folks. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday, where I'll be speaking to Ash Regan herself to set out her campaign goals and her vision for independence. Follow us on Twitter at Untribal News or at Instagram at Untribal Politics. And on our website, we have all our content, all our articles, all our podcasts, which you can listen on as well, www.untribalpolitics.co.uk. Cheers for now.